listening to the Big Guy Fantasy Sports Podcast Network. Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
Hello and welcome to episode 121 of the Nasty Cast Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by Dots Pretzels. I am Nathan Duck, and you can find me on Twitter at Nathan Duck. And I am joined today by the manliest man that I know, Manly Van Lee. What's up?
That's right. Hello. Well, glad to be here. I finally arrived after a long drive. I did basically had to listen to my car say horrible, horrible things to me because of you and Ron, but I made it okay.
I blame Ron fully for that.
Well, sure.
Mr. Ron Rigney, welcome to the show. How are you doing this evening?
Thank you. It's been quite an evening of, as I alluded to before, my wife getting $250 speeding tickets and insane hurricane-like conditions outside of my house and putting children to bed. But other than that, I am swell. Thanks for asking.
Nobody's better than Van's vehicle.
And to go ahead and explain that to the clueless listeners, my car reads me text messages. So once I said that to you and Ron in a group thread, suddenly I was bombarded with sexually suggestive text messages from the perspective of my car.
You know, I've never thought about it from that angle before, but man, I bet every time it gets gas, like, cars are just like, oh.
This one was, because she was almost out, but now she's good.
It's good now. What's not good is some things that we're going to be talking about today, including the one Mike Trout. We're also going to be talking about some players that are going to and fro from the bullpen and the disabled list. We're going to play legit or quit, touch on some prospects, bullpens, and streamers. But, of course, if you want to get a hold of us on Twitter and tell us the dirtiest thought you've ever had about your vehicle, you can reach out to us on Twitter at NastyCastBGFS, at Nathan Duck, and at Manly Van Lee, and at The Real Maday, M-A-D-A-Y. And, of course, check out the go to BigGuyFantasySports.com for all our written work and find links to the BG Baseball Podcast and the Consistency Cast as well. Bob Long's 2017 Fantasy Football Consistency Guide is available for pre-order, so get on that. Football season is creeping up on us. And, of course, if you enjoy the show, please give us a rate and review on iTunes or wherever you listen to us. And you can qualify yourself for some free Dots Pretzels. If you just let us know you did that, then I'll ship you some because it's awesome. And if you don't leave a rate or review, we will kill a puppy. So there's that. But moving on to the opening pitch for this week. I wanted to get you guys' opinion. We finally had a bases clearing brawl. It was magnificent. So I'm posing this question to you guys. Which was more impressive in that fight? Hunter Strickland's grudge-holding ability throughout the years or Bryce Harper's punch-throwing hair?
I'm a big fan of that hair. However, I'm going to go off on a bit of a tangent here. There's this huge just idea that Strickland threw at Harper because of the home runs 3 years ago. Is this true, or is this just a narrative that people are coming up with? Maybe he just threw at him because he's really good, or he doesn't like him, or maybe something happened in the clubhouse. I don't know. So I'm not a huge proponent or fan of this whole, oh, he hit two home runs off of him 3 years ago, so clearly he's going to hit him 3 years later, because that just seems absurd to me. And in the interviews, Strickland said, yeah, it's a long time to even care about that man or something like that. Now, he's obviously a psycho, so I don't know if we can believe what he says, but I don't know. The whole concept of, you know, holding this grudge to me is just, I don't buy into it all that much.
I mean,
I like the Johnny Bravo hair. Yeah, I think you guys saw that meme going around the internet. Yep. I think that was the best one I saw. Mm-hmm. I think maybe Hunter Strickland possibly has a grudge over his hair, maybe.
I do.
Potentially. And I think that I was least impressed with the helmet throw.
Oh, it was so bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that was like meant to be with him, or if that was like I almost equated that to like when girls get in a fight in a club and they like take their earrings off and throw them down and their shoes and throw them down. So maybe that's what he's going for. I don't know.
That's accurate. Yeah, I do think that's a good description for that. Yeah. Now, but I've seen far better helmet throws at Little League games. So
yes,
this one was bad. But you can tell he was just so angry. He was going to throw the helmet at him, which I'm totally cool with, by the way. If a pitcher has a little rock that they can fling at a batter as hard as they want, I'm okay with a pitcher throwing a helmet at a guy. I don't have a problem with it. It kind of evens the whole fight.
Yeah, well, the key, he got it wrong because he tried to throw it by the bill. And this is what I've read. I read somebody on Twitter say you gotta throw it by the ear flap, which So I give Harper props because he obviously it was not premeditated. Otherwise, he would have done that. He would have looked up that information instead of looking so foolish.
Maybe 3 years ago, he should have looked it up after he hit those home runs.
He should have been prepared for this the whole time. That's why, like, I was out doing stuff that day. I didn't even see it until I watched the clips later. So. That's the only narrative that I could find was all those years ago, those home runs, like as far as what other reason could have possibly brought that on. I got nothing. So
yeah, real quick, what do you guys think about the suspensions?
Fine. Yeah. I mean,
you think they should have been equal?
No, I think Strickland should probably get more because I think it's kind of a joke that pitchers are allowed to do this. I think we're at a time in society and history that we can go, listen, the hit by pitch is not a good old boy thing. It's stupid. It should disappear. The retaliation hit by pitch is stupid because, I mean, you could kill a guy. If you miss, you hit a guy in the temple, he's dead. It's plain and simple. So I'm not a big fan. We saw Chris Iannetta get hit in the face with a pitch the other day. That wasn't intentional, but he busted teeth, his nose. Like, that was horrible. So we need to just stop that. So I think if there's real intent and you can show that there was likely intent to hit the guy with the pitch, i.e. a fastball in the butt, they should probably get a pretty big suspension. Harper's is what, 3-4 games? It's no big deal, but I think you do have to suspend him just to say, listen, you can't charge the mound, you can't do that, but I'm more than happy with him getting less than Strickland.
Yeah, is that what you were getting at, Ron, or?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to me, I see where you're coming from, but I honestly, I wouldn't be surprised, and I haven't heard yet. Is Strickland going to appeal that? Are either one of them appealing it, or are they just going to take it and move on? Anybody heard?
I'm sure they'll appeal. Last I heard, they were both going to appeal, but, I mean, that was a day ago, so I don't know.
I think, I think Rice, well, he got his reduced from 4 to 3, so I think his suspension starts tonight. But as far as Strickland, I haven't heard anything else.
Gotcha.
Mr. Strickland?
I do agree that it's so stupid, especially when it's not an obvious intent to throw. Like, you obviously just, I don't know, somebody's got crappy command and just accidentally whale somebody in like the 7th inning of a 12-1 game, and then the next inning, I saw that earlier this year, I can't remember what teams it was, but like the next inning the pitcher came out and he threw at the other team, and the announcers were like, well, no, they're square. Like, that is the dumbest freaking thing I've ever heard in my life. What is the point? It was an accident. Good Lord, move on.
That Gaussman game where he threw a curveball that wasn't anywhere near the hitter, and they're like, you're out of the game! Yeah. It was in the first inning. It was so stupid.
In that one, at least the ump knew that he screwed up, like, pretty much right away afterwards. They're like, I'm not going to peg the guy with a 75-mile-an-hour curveball, you know? And so everybody's yelling at him. He's like, yeah, okay, I guess I goofed on that one. But no, in this instance, it was like, retribution for this accidental, beaning. And it's just stupid. And everybody was okay with it. And they're like, okay, well, now we can all just move on. Ridiculous. Anyway, on to... Ugh, if only Mike Trout had just got hit in the butt, but that is not the case. He's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks from the sound of it. And so, Van, I'm going to turn this over to you. You, of course, are a resident Angels fan, so I'm just going to get your feelings on this one. Are you doing okay?
Well, anyone that knows me knows that I'm not one for hyperbole. I don't like to say extravagant phrases. I like to be real. And to be honest, stop and think about like the worst atrocities that have happened in mankind's history. This is up there, like top 4, I would say, at least. This is horrible. Yeah, I sob myself to sleep at night. That's how bad this is, because I think we discussed it last week, but there was a statistic that came out that said that the Angels offense had accrued, I don't know, 4 war or something this season, and Mike Trout had 3.8 of that or something obscene. And it's, I mean, the Angels were kind of hanging in there. They were a little bit over 500, but without Trout for 6 to 8 weeks, there's zero hope. I mean, he was buoying that offense, so I don't think anything I don't think anything they do is going to be able to recover for this. Even if Eric Young Jr. turns into something really good, it's just a bad, bad place for the Angels to be.
It is.
Well, I think too, like what you kind of hit it on the head right there. When you look at what's around him in that lineup, the fact that they were over 500, I think speaks to what he is able to do. You know, we talked about the war there, but I mean, there's nothing that they're going to be able to obviously replace him with. And in fantasy, you're not going to be able to replace him either. I mean, you're just going to maybe have to ride it out. Or I know already, because I have one league that I was fortunate enough to get him in. I think it's the only time I've ever owned him. My plan for the year was, it's an auction keeper, so my plan for the year was to attack pitching. So I was able to get Mad Bum. I was able to get Scherzer. And then I way overpaid for Trout in the draft, and that was kind of my core of my team. Well, that's two-thirds of it that's gone. So Scherzer's just kind of keeping me afloat. But I'm not going to be able to replace that. And I've already gotten a couple of ridiculous trade offers for people thinking that I'm throwing in the towel, which I'm not quite there yet. You know, I'm kind of middle of the pack in the league. But there's nothing that you can – that either real life or fantasy you're going to replace him with. I mean, there's a few guys on the waivers that are kind of appealing, but – Mike Trout's Mike Trout. He's a tier above everybody else.
Yeah, that was the first thing I did was reach out to Bob in the BGFS Dynasty Classic and say, "Hey, that Mike Trout, because I'm in second to last place and I'm ready to pretty much throw in the towel." It's just been, we'll get to Jose Quintana, but my God, he's just been killing me there. So yeah, all you Dynasty Keeper League players, this is the best chance that you're going to get to acquire Mike Trout. Especially if he's on a contending team. And let's be honest, if you've got Mike Trout, you are probably contending. So, yeah, I had him on two leagues this year, which is the first time I've ever owned him in multiple leagues. So, of course, now it would be the, he's going to miss a third of the season.
Yeah.
any interest in Ben Revere with potential full-time at-bats?
Not really. He's been pretty bad this year. I think there's some cheap steals to be had. But I feel like there are a ton of Ben Reveres out there. So you probably already have one on the bench or... you can get one pretty easily. So I don't know. He'll get playing time, but at the beginning of the year, I thought it was a great signing. See if he could rebound, but he clearly really hasn't. So I'm not all that interested.
No, same here. The guys I wrote down, and I looked at Yahoo ownership percentage because that's kind of my go-to when we look at that. And Cameron Maven's still only owned at 30%, which I think considering Trout being out and considering Maven's hit pretty well lately. That Silly's only owned in a third of the leagues is kind of remarkable. And I saw Bradley Zimmer is only 18% owned in Yahoo League. So he's a guy that I would look at possibly if he's still out there as well. Yeah. Just shocked by that one.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, Maven, he's been hot. He was the one that I sort of pegged when I had stashed Ben Revere in a league. And I was thinking that Cameron Maven was going to be the one who would play for maybe a couple weeks and then, be on the disabled list, which he is wont to do. And instead, unfortunately, it's Mike Trout. And yeah, Ben Revere looks like garbage. So deep leagues, I would speculate on him if you need speed, but he will give you absolutely nothing else. I really thought he would rebound from last year, but he's still hitting .212, even worse than last year. So not looking too promising there. And it's not looking more promising in Boston with Dustin Pedroia heading to the disabled list due to a wrist injury. So, Ron, I'll turn it to you first. Who are we looking to replace him with?
Well, I looked at just what the prognosis was with Pedroia, and they feel pretty confident that he's only going to be out the 10 days. So I guess if you own him, that's a positive. That's kind of the best-case scenario with him. But once again, going to the Yahoo ownership – I looked at a couple of guys that are around 20% or a little bit more. Jed Lowry's only about 20%, and I'm not big on Oakland's lineup, but he's hitting in the middle of it usually. He's a guy that I look at a lot in DFS because he's very cheap, but he's usually hitting anywhere from 4 to 6, seems like. So he's a guy that's 20% owned. Tim Beckham's out there at 28%, and I don't know how long he's going to keep up what he's doing as far as – he's obviously not looking at like the number one pick that he was, but he's been serviceable. He's multi-position eligible. I think we talked about that earlier in the year. When you're plucking these guys off waivers, to me, you're not going to replace a lot of that production, but when you can put them multiple places, that's attractive. And then Whit Merrifield for Kansas City, 18% owned, 6 bombs, 12 RBI, and I think he's eligible at second outfield as well. So I'd look at those three guys right there, but the ownership percentage on those guys for what they're doing is pretty low.
Definitely. And the only other name I had to add to that list surprisingly was Chris Taylor, who's still owned in less than 30% of leagues, which is absurd because he's hitting 319, 417, 540. And he's a guy that this year I've had to go back and look because I thought he was the same Mariners guy that came up and did kind of a similar thing where he hit out of the gate for a bit and then was sent down. And it is the same guy, as bizarre as that is, but he's playing really well. And I'll second the notion that they talked about Pedroia's prognosis really isn't that big of a deal. They said it's pretty much the best case scenario with it. So he should be back out of the 10 days. However, he was also a guy whose power had waned and wrist injuries kind of sap power. So I don't know what to think. I think he'll be okay because they're saying it's not really that big of a deal, but we'll see.
Yeah, Taylor was the guy that I had listed as well. And so, yeah, Lowry, oh boy.
That's what happens when you go third.
there's somebody else I had sort of. Logan Forsythe is back now. He's continues to be pretty bad, but he does have
not
an
OBP,
upside.
But that's about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Looking in Yahoo, Devin Travis somehow is only owned in 57% of Yahoo leagues. We'll talk about him a little bit later. And then, since you guys said, this is a short term ad. If you are looking for power instead of speed, and you're just hoping to maybe get a couple bombs, Ryan Schimpf, he might hit you a couple homers. It's weird because he can't hit for average, but he just keeps slugging home runs. And I was actually just talking with former co-host of the show, Joe Osachi, on Twitter, trying to decide if he was actually a good player or not. He has suggested he's perhaps Gurable or Terra Good.
Fair enough. I like it. Yeah, 166, 297 on the average OBP, but he has 13 homers. That's insane.
Which, I mean, I basically spit that out as hyperbole in the preseason. I think that was a Jessica Kleinschmidt episode. We talked about that, and it has definitely come to fruition quite literally. But anyway, moving on, Danny Salazar has been relegated to the bullpen in Cleveland. So, Van, what are you doing with him in Dynasty and Redraft formats?
Well, for example, I have him in both. I have him in a Dynasty and I have him in a Redraft. You're hanging on to him either way. I think if you own him, you really should hang on to him. If you don't own him, I'm saying bye. He's still very young. Francona came out and said that, listen, this is not really a demotion. This is a get yourself right because we still think you'll be good. And we've seen a lot of guys who, Danny Duffy being a prime example, a guy who struggles with control, goes to the bullpen, kind of gets some things hammered out, and then is really good back as a starter. Salazar has shown that he can pitch out of the rotation and can strike everyone out. So I still really, really like his potential, particularly with the age. So I'm buying in a lot of places. As far as Dynasty, though, for example, one team I have that has pretty good pitching, I'm putting him on the bench and I'm forgetting about him. So if you have the spot, hang on to him. If you don't, I mean, I don't know. It's just going to depend on the rest of your staff. You may have to just kind of weather this out and see if he gives you at least some decent stats out of the bullpen. But I do like his long-term outlook here still.
Yeah, same with me. And you hit it on the head there too, man, as far as if you have the spot to keep him, you need to keep him, and you need to keep him in every format. And you talked about his striking out. His K rate's right around 30%, but the walk rate is just a shade under 12. So that needs to be trimmed down a little bit. He's also allowed 11 homers already. So I think that if he can correct those couple of things, and I think the Danny Duffy comparison is very good, but yeah, you hang on to him everywhere. And the other thing is too, he's being replaced in the rotation. There's guys like Clevinger and Josh Tomlin. Those aren't really guys that I would count on as starters in my rotation, especially Tomlin, who's got an ERA that's around 5.8. And then Corey Kluber's coming back as well, so that'll be interesting to see what they do there if he comes back and is effective. And you know, somebody's going to have to get pushed out, but I don't think it's going to be a case of him being demoted for very long. I think that, you know, maybe if some of the pressure's off of him a little bit, if he's coming in the middle innings instead of being a starter, and he know, you know, I think a lot of it's mental. These guys that kind of struggle with certain stats, I think they know that they have to improve on these things, and it kind of gets stuck in their head. So maybe that'll rectify that a little bit. But yeah, you're keeping him everywhere. I think he's what, 27? Is that right?
Somewhere around there. 26, yeah. 27. He's right there. Yeah.
So yeah, you're hanging on to him no matter what. He's still got a ton of potential, and he'll be back up there fairly soon, I think.
I think the only place that I would be okay cutting him is in a 10-team mixed league, because pitching is just so. I mean, this year I guess is a little different just because everybody's on the freaking DL. But you know, as bad as he's been, and we don't know how long he's going to be in the bullpen, I wouldn't have a problem cutting him there. But everywhere else, I agree, I'm hanging on to him, especially dynasty keeper leagues, because yeah, this is the lowest point of his value, and you don't want to trade a guy then. So,
conversely, try and trade for him. Like, that's going to be one of my MOs here in the Dynasty League. I'm going to see if I can swing a deal for him. And, you know, Bradley has Trout in that league as well. And if there's anyone I have good rapport with, it's Bradley. So I'm going to give that a shot, see if I can trade for him.
Has he consistently trade raped you in the past?
No, he is not as bad as whichever one of the Wetzels it is that ruins me, because he just trades me people who die or have Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, he's been really good at that. Yeah, I don't know. Now that I'm thinking about that, I don't know if I have enough optimism for Danny Salazar long term to be trading for him if the price is too high. If you can get him for for dirt cheap, if they're just some as a back end guy, then sure. You know, I'd take a chance on him. But man, he's got a lot to iron out.
So, he does, yeah.
Go ahead.
I would say it's kind of like a bird. That's its plumage is just puffed up way too much. You just want to smooth it down, make it more of a simple, streamlined guy, and then there'll be a better bird.
Well done. Well done.
No, that was horrible. That was horrible. I'll do it again later.
Okay. along those lines of pitchers who just can't seem to find their stride, especially as far as control goes, Vincent Velasquez, he's back to the DL, as he is wont to do, with a right flexor strain. Ron, we'll start with you. Are you still optimistic on Vincent Velasquez in the long run?
I am in Dynasty. The age, 24, the ability with the strikeouts is there. And I looked at a couple of things that when you combine them together, as far as a couple of stats, it spells out trouble for any pitcher. His strain rate's around 70%, which I looked up the rankings on that. That only places him around 73rd. BABIP's 308, and his FIP is over 5, which when you put all those things together, you know, that means that the guys are getting on base. When the ball's getting put in play, guys are coming home. And that's going to kill any pitcher. But I think that, you know, we talked about age with Danny Salazar. Velasquez is even younger, and he doesn't have much of an offense behind him, so that hurts. I think that hurts him a little bit as well. But just his pitching himself, he's got to get the command to be a little better. And we know he can strike guys out, but he's got to kind of show that full game. And he's got to be able to pitch out of jams. I feel like that's one of the things that we talk about a lot of these pitchers that are struggling, especially the youngsters. They're putting guys on base, and they're not able to pitch their way out of it. And I think that he's kind of the poster child for that.
Think about him, Van. Ran.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I was looking up some statistic from him. Yeah. You know, I don't know. For being a similar guy to Danny Salazar, I'm so out on Vincent Velasquez. It's crazy. I think part of that comes from the fact that, I mean, I've seen Salazar do it before. So maybe it's just hey, I know he can throw at least a decent amount of innings. Salazar had 185 in 2015. So Velasquez's high was, of course, last year with 131. So I'm not quite as high on him. I think he's, of the two guys, he's more than likely going to be the guy who ends up in the bullpen in the long term. And I believe that at the beginning of the year, I think it's really reinforced it. Now, obviously, his numbers, like Ron said, are kind of crazy bad this year. And I think there's quite a bit of misfortune in there. So overall, I still think he's a good pitcher. I just don't know if he's going to be a starter for a whole lot longer. And flexor injuries sometimes turn into other even worse injuries. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on, because we don't know what his timetable is right now.
Well, and that's kind of the one reason that I would temper my optimism in the long run, is because he seems to just consistently be injured. Everything else I still like. You know, like Ron said, he's just about to turn 25 years old, so he's still very young. Just so much strikeout upside, and the walks, they were so much better last year. It's weird because his walks per nine are up by, you know, three quarters of a point, and yet his first pitch strike rate is way up. It's at a career high 66%, and so I don't exactly know what's going on there. There's just, I mean, he's been so homer prone. His XFIP is only 4, whereas his ERA is just a shade under, well, I guess 558. But yeah, I do continue to have a dynasty love for him, I guess. Like, I do own him in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League. And
you're welcome.
Yeah. No wonder I got him so cheap. But yeah, I think I'm just going to hold on to him because I am more optimistic. But that said, if anybody comes along with a fair offer for him, I'm, you know, in the upper third of the league standings right now. So I wouldn't, you know, it would behoove me, I guess, to get rid of him perhaps if I can get some now production. And yeah, that's the right flex to strain. That's typically a pretty long absence, I believe he'll be looking at there. So redraft leagues, if you're in shallow formats, if you can't stash him on the DL, I wouldn't feel bad just jettisoning him. But yeah, deeper leagues, 15 team leagues, he's a hold for me. And then moving on to another guy who got called up. We speculated on him a little bit last week, and he got called up by the Rays. It's Jose De Leon. He made one relief appearance and then promptly got sent back down. So, Van, is he a stash for you for the rest of the season?
That's kind of a tricky one. I would say no, simply because of the team he's on. The Rays are notorious for taking their time with their pitchers, and I think case in point would be David Price. There was the year several years ago, of course, when Price came up, that they used him out of the bullpen, and I think that was the World Series year where they used him out of the bullpen there. And then the following season, they put him back in the rotation. We've already seen them use De Leon in the bullpen, so I think this year is going to be something like that. They're going to have him a starter in the minors. Maybe they get him some major league innings as a reliever, but I don't think the value is quite going to be there just simply because that's the way the Rays operate.
Yeah, when you look at when he got brought up the other day, he did get the win, but he also gave up three runs and two and two-thirds, four hits, so he didn't look sharp at all. He's allowed four runs and four innings at Triple-A. I think if you're in a deep dynasty league, just because of his potential and kind of where you see a lot of scouts rank him on the prospect list, I think you kind of have to own him until you're fully sure that he's kind of floundered and he's not going to be the guy. But yeah, it's with the Rays too. You know, they don't have any need to rush anybody up, but he hasn't looked impressive at AAA or at the major league level. Now, he's only had one start in AAA, so him getting sent back down. Or no, actually, he only has had one start, I believe, because he just got called up right before he got call up. Yeah, so I mean, I'd like to see what he's going to be able to do there. You know, a little bit bigger sample size, but if you look at his numbers last year in the small call-up he got with the Dodgers too, he had an ERA over six, just didn't look very good there either. So I'd take him in some deeper dynasty leagues, but I'm not real optimistic at this point. He's got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, as far as single season leagues, as far as stash goes, he'd be down on my list. Like, I was excited about stashing a guy like Jose Berrios, and Jose De Leon would be considerably farther behind. Like, I think it'd be a 15-team mix league, you know, before I even would consider stashing him, just because I think you're looking at this year probably back-end starting stuff. I think he got overrated in the prospect community a little bit recently. But that said, I do think that he can be effective later on in the season. I don't necessarily think that Matt Andres is going to keep up what he's doing. And like we touched on last week, Blake Snell is still walking a lot of guys down on the farm, so I don't know if we see him back anytime soon. We might actually see De Leon back before Snell, depending on how they pitch. But yeah, he at least does have some upside. I like him long-term definitely a lot more than Matt Andres or Erasmo Ramirez. Ugh, I've had enough Erasmo.
Well, just real quick, Matt Andres went on a 10-day DL today as Did well, he? And they called okay. up. Oh, yeah, they yeah. called up a couple guys that I'm not real familiar with. I don't think, as far as top prospects that they have, Austin Pruitt and Ryan Garten, as far as arms to add. So not real sharp on either one. Austin Pruitt seems like he was up there towards the top of their prospect list, now that I think about it. But it wasn't Honeywell. It wasn't De Leon. So
the other piece, too, that I mentioned, I think it was last week when we talked about this, was Chi-Wei Hu. Yeah. And they called him up. He, I think, did the same thing, pitched an inning in relief. I could see him providing more value this year than De Leon because he's less of a hyped prospect. So they mm-hmm. just kind of throw him out and get some innings. It's all, you know, hearsay at this point. We don't know. But I could see something like that working out in their favor a little more so than De Leon.
Yeah, Austin Pruitt, I'm pretty sure, is the NASCAR driver. So I wouldn't expect too much from him on as far as fantasy goodness on the baseball field. Seems kind of weird. But We're also talking about call-ups, so let's go to the Astros, where they have called up David Paulino. And who are we on here? Is it back to you, Van?
Sure.
I think we're on Ron, actually.
Fine. Ron can go. I'm not bitter or anything.
Take that.
You need to unpuff your plumage, Van.
Oh, see, now that was good. I'm impressed by that one.
Thank you. I like the fact, I mean, when you look at him, he's 6'7", 215, so there's not a lot to him as far as weight-wise. He's a good 9 inches taller than me, and I think I have him by about 20 pounds. So, but he can still – you look at his pitches, that they grade out very well. Fastball and curveball, changeup all plus, looks good. He started the other night, or did he start today?
Yeah, no, Wednesday today.
Today?
Yeah,
okay.
As the Astros drubbed my Twins.
Yeah, and I mean, he only went 4 innings, but struck out 8 guys. Only walked one, and I think that's big right there. Just the one walk for a guy that's getting his first start. So obviously, you like to see him go a little further into games, but I think that he's pretty solid. And you know, you look at the Astros rotation behind Keuchel and McCullers. There's not a whole lot to like, so I don't see why, unless this Paulino comes up and just implodes, I don't see why he wouldn't get a decent look to see what he can do as far as at the major league level. But overall, I think the stuff is there. Nice big kid, throws three, like I said, three solid pitches. So I'm optimistic with what he can do if they get long enough look at what he can do at the major league level.
Yeah, and, you know, they came out and said that Joe Musgrove, who also is a NASCAR driver, by the way, based on that name, he's only going to miss this one start, so he may be taking that spot from Paulino back. But I'm kind of with you. Their Astros rotation is not great, so why not give the kid a shot? However, he has had a bit of a checkered injury history in his past, so it's always a matter of whether or not he can stay healthy. And then there was a thing, I think it was last year, may have been earlier this year, where he, quote, violated team policy. So they just suspended him by the team for, I don't remember how long it was. It was longer than a week. So this was a pretty big infraction. So and no one knows what happened. They were pretty mum on it, which I actually really enjoy seeing that the rumor mill didn't churn anything out. But so maybe there's some makeup concerns, or maybe he grew from it. I don't know. So it's an interesting look. I think you were kind of right that he's really gotten all of his pitches going right now. And the old thing with him was that, is he going to have enough secondary offerings to make it through the lineup a couple of times? And I think he's shown that he can. So the future's bright. I just don't necessarily know if it's going to be this season for him.
Yeah, I think what it was, they got him suspended earlier in the season, Van, is he was puffing up his plumage at management, and they did not
care for
that.
All right, I'm done with this. No more.
But yeah, I mean, look, and you know, speaking of plumage, Brad Peacock is in that rotation right now. And Mike Fiers, and those guys suck. So I don't see a whole lot of hurdles as far as Paulino sticking in the rotation. Just 23, you know, so maybe they don't want to throw him in the fire just yet, but it's encouraging to see him what he did, like you said, Ron, with the 8 strikeouts against my Twins, who all of a sudden look kind of like last year. But anyway,
like the Twins.
Yeah, they starting to look like the Twins again. Good Lord, that bullpen. Anyway, we're going to move on to a new game, which is the same game that we play every week, and that is called Legit or Quit. And we're going to start off with a guy who is just freaking killing me. It's Jose Quintana, starting pitcher with the White Sox. I have him in 4 of my 7 leagues, and let me read you his stat line this year. 64 and one-thirds innings pitched. He's 2-7 with a 5.60 ERA. Van, what in the hell is going on with Jose Quintana?
It's a really interesting case, and I'll come out and say that I was probably not the biggest Quintana fan. I still liked him and appreciated what he did, but I think people were saying he could pass as an ace, and I thought, nah, he's more like a low 2, early 3 starter. And I don't know, but this year, everything seems really in line with what he has done in the past. I mean, there's no real notable differences except that he's just giving up more hits, more home runs, and a few more walks. But the BABIP is fine. The batting average, or I'm sorry, it's only 10 points above his career BABIP of 305. it's just interesting. I think the home run to fly ball rate's a little too high, so that's probably going to come down. But the question is has the league just kind of figured him out a little more? So this is just, I think this is too much, like 5-6 ERA is too high. But is he more of a 4 ERA pitcher now? I don't know. It's just a very weird question and a weird player to look at so far.
Yeah, and you, the one thing that sticks out as being a positive, because I got him in one of my dynasty leagues, I traded for him in the offseason, is I like the fact that he's averaging just under a K per inning, because I didn't look at him as being a big strikeout guy when I got him. I was looking at him to help me other places, which it's been exactly the opposite of that. You touched on the bad BABIP a little bit. He's allowed 10 home runs, which is kind of middle of the pack. I was kind of surprised to find out that he's allowed the same amount of home runs as Kershaw and Scherzer, but the difference is you can't allow everything else on top of that. You can allow a home run here and there if you can get everybody else out, and he's not been able to do that. Strand rate's real low. Strand rate's down around 65%. I think that really affects him a lot. Hard contact's at 28%, so he's getting beat up a little bit. I'm legit on him. I kind of put it as optimistically legit, and I don't know if that's more of me wanting to make the trade I made right, or if I really think that that's coming, but if he's just got to be able to get out of jams. I talk about that a lot, and I think that's something that is big. But I like the strikeouts I'm getting from him, but unfortunately you're not getting much else than the strikeouts.
Yeah, well, at least there's that. He's throwing his curve 6% more this year, so perhaps that has something to do with some of the added strikeouts. His swinging strike rate has actually gone down a little bit, so it's kind of conjecture, but his sinker, he's throwing at 7% less this year. Just trying to find differences, you know, that might cue something up as far as what's amiss with him. But he's throwing that less. That's good because it's getting tattooed. Last year, it was just a .226 batting average against. This year, it's .310. But his hard contact overall is still really good at 28%. It's below average. So his control just seems kind of out of whack. He's leaving pitches. I was looking up his heat map splits against righties, because lefties, he's still been really good, but he's just been getting hammered by righties, and it seems like he's leaving pitches over the plate against right-handed hitters instead of pitching them away like he did last year, and avoiding that, you know, that just throwing it right down the heart of the zone. And I assume that that's what is going to get you all that increased home run per fly ball rate. So I wonder if it's just something that has been mechanically fleeting for him this year, and that's affecting his command and leaving too many pitches over the zone. That's about all that I can come up with as far as what's wrong with him, because like you guys said, nothing else statistically really looks that far out of line. But that leads me to believe that we should consider him legit, and I'm going to keep holding on to him because I think that this looks fine to me. His velocity is fine. Like, I think he's going to right the ship.
So there's plenty of optimism to be had, for sure.
Yeah, so I'm going to hang on to him. Might leave him on the bench for the next start. I don't even know where he's starting next time. Regardless, I might leave him on the bench. Seems like he might have something to get ironed out there. But okay, our next guy is going to be Trevor Bauer, who over 57 innings has a 5-4 record with a 6 ERA, but he struck out 14 batters in 7 innings in his last start. He just went crazy over the last couple of innings, struck out the side a few times. So, Ron, what do you think about the Trevor Bauer moving forward?
I like the K to walk ratio is spectacular, 73-19. I like it a lot. When I look through what he's doing, he needs to quit allowing home runs. His home runs per nine is 1.74, which is 13th highest in the league. So if he can cut that down a little bit, I think that it will be the biggest thing that would impact his numbers. But the 6 ERA, it's got to come down. I mean, I don't think that you can strike that many guys out and walk that few and keep that ERA going. And so I think that there's something there as far as what he can do. But the only reservation I have with him is it just seems like he's one of these guys that we keep waiting on and waiting on and waiting on. You know, I think he was a top three pick, you know, him and Garrett Cole coming out of UCLA in that draft. And it just hasn't happened. And so I think that you're getting to a point where you're getting tired of him if you're hanging on to him. But I mean, you see something you like here and there, and then you get two or three bad starts. I think it's a case of this year. I was just having a conversation about him today with a friend of mine. As far as injuries. You might need guys like Trevor Bauer because there's not a whole hell of a lot out there that you're going to be able to add. I think that him and I talked about earlier in this week at one point, I want to say around Monday or Tuesday, there were 177 players on the 10-day DL or more. And so when you have that many on there, you're going to have to throw guys in there like Trevor Bauer. So, I mean, we look at Quintana, what he gives you in strikeouts, you know, as far as being, like we said, maybe a third or fourth starter. Bauer's giving you – he gave you 14 the other night. And the thing is, he has the stuff to be able to do that just about every time he goes out. But I'm legit on him for that reason, but it's cautiously legit just because I feel like we've been waiting forever for the breakout, and the breakout hasn't come yet.
Yeah, and his ERA is currently sitting at 6, but his FIP is 3.98 and his xFIP is 3.04. Now, he's consistently had an ERA above his speculative metrics, so clearly there's something to that because we have a long enough track record of it. But he's a better pitcher than this, and, I mean, when you're striking out 11.5 per 9, there's value to be had. Now, I'm done thinking that this is a guy who's going to break out and, you know, bust a 3 ERA and throw 200 innings. But if he can get you 175 innings of a 4 ERA, I'm fine with that as a number 5 guy or a bench guy that fills in when you spot start him. So I think if you temper your expectations and you play him for what he is now, then you'll be fine with him, and he's a legit guy there.
Yeah, I think it's got to be a pretty deep league before I'm too interested in him. Although it is, you know, one thing with him, he's always been a kitchen sinker, right? Like, he's got just a dozen different pitches. He likes to throw this pitch in 3 different varieties and really keep everybody off guard, off balance, whatever you want to say. And I don't know how many people I've heard over the years say, man, if this guy would just focus on like 3 pitches, maybe 4, and just really refine them, he'd probably be really good. And in this last start, he just basically started throwing the crap out of that curveball. And 40% use of the curveball in the last one, more than any other pitch, more than his four-seam. Yeah, so he just basically turned into Chris Archer all of a sudden. And we obviously saw the results. And so that kind of leads me to believe that, like, it gives me a little bit of interest as far as, you know, if he does that, if he just starts hammering the curve and, you know, working in the four-seam sinker, you know, cutter on occasion, you know, maybe he can be better at least. And hopefully, like you guys said, limit the home runs a little bit. But otherwise, I just think that he's too much of a head case. I'm not necessarily buying in on him being a must own in, you know, standard mixed leagues just yet. But that at least did pique my interest on him. So I am going to be watching him. I'd be adding him in 15-team mixed leagues, like I said, and deeper, and watching him with a close eye in all the other formats.
Would you be watching him with a GoPro attached to a drone?
Well, if I wanted to injure him, then certainly I would come right up to him.
As long as he tries to clean it with a sword or whatever it was that he did.
Or if you want to be arrested.
look at the bright side of things anyway.
Yes, noted douchebag, Trevor Bauer. Anyway, perhaps a guy who is more highly regarded in the baseball community, Robbie Ray. His name is Robbie. How bad can he be? He's got 2 first names. 69 innings pitched so far this year. He is 5-3 with a even 3 ERA. And over his last starts especially is why we are talking about him today. That's 23 2/3 innings of shutout baseball that he has thrown with 8 hits, 3 walks, and 25 Ks. So, Robbie Ray, man, what do you think?
I'm legit all the way. He's actually added a curveball this year, which is extremely similar to a slider, but there's enough of a difference that we're obviously seeing results from it. His control still needs work. He's still walking too many guys. But if you're giving up less hits and less contact and fewer home runs allowed, then clearly your numbers are going to look better, and his numbers look really good. He's always struck guys out, so that's never been a question. A little bit of Salazar in that regard of, hey, he can strike guys out, but the control's kind of wonky. So this could be the path that maybe Salazar gets back to, or maybe Ray continues down this path and gets even better. I still like him, and I've tried to trade for him in a ton of leagues earlier in the year when he kind of scuffled a bit, and it just never worked. And I kind of wish I'd had, because he's been really good, and I'm legit all the way with Robbie Ray.
Yeah, same here. I love him long time, if I could. and the reason I like him a lot is was the league I alluded to earlier that I have Trout and Mad Bum and I have these guys on the bench, but I have Scherzer. I got Robbie Ray for $2 in the auction, which I was by far the best pick I had the whole time. And like Vance said, we know he can strike guys out. That's the main reason that everybody targeted him in the offseason, even though his ERA, I think, ended up last year in the mid-4s.
But 4.90.
4.90, almost 5. So when you look at the 3 ERA, I think that's big. And I think, you know, you alluded to the last few starts he's had where he's allowed no runs in about 23 innings. Maybe, like you alluded to, maybe this is where he starts to figure it out and kind of put all of that together. But I'm definitely legit on him all the way, and there's, you know, I'd like to get him. I wish I would have, like Vance said, got him before now, because I think it's going to be even more difficult to add him. But I like what I'm seeing with him.
I'm going to give him the legit sticker as well. You know, like you said, Van, he's pretty much scrapped that changeup and started throwing a curveball instead along with the slider. And it's been really good so far. It's got 15% whiffs and 67% ground balls. And so that is going to work, and that will gladly take the place of the changeup. So that alone is going to be a huge boon to his value moving forward. However, you still have to take into account his splits home and away. If you look at his away splits, like his last 3 starts were all on the road, 42 and a third innings this season, 0.64 ERA. In 26 and two-thirds innings at home, a 6.75 ERA. So he has been very, very bad at Chase Field. So hopefully, I've heard rumblings that within a month or two, they're going to be putting in that humidor. And it's rumored to be cutting home runs by about 50%, according to some research that they've done. So if you're going to get Robbie Ray, I mean, the best time to do it was a month ago. But if you're going to do it, if you're going to do it now, perhaps, you know, even better stuff is on the horizon. So definitely legit on the Robbie Ray. And also shout out to Nick Duran, who on one of our off-season episodes, he was really big on Robbie Ray. So he definitely hit the jackpot on that one. He said he was buying him in all the dynasties. So hopefully everybody went out and listened to him. And moving on, anyway, our next pitcher is going to be Sonny Gray, who this season, after coming off the DL, has thrown 34 and one-thirds innings. He is 2-2 with a 4.72 ERA, but he's had some big strikeout outings this year. Been a little up and down. But, Ron, what do you think about Sonny Gray this year? Legit or quit?
I'm legit. I think he will be legit. He's shown it a little bit in a couple of starts, but he's got 18 walks to 31 strikeouts. Got to cut the walks down a little bit. And I looked at his FIP. His FIP is 4. And one of the things I was looking at is kind of maybe why that is. And I looked at Oakland's defense, and they're not doing him any favors at all, as far as outside of his, you know, his FIP. If he's not getting it done just himself, their defense has 51 errors. And I looked at how many of those were in his starts. 7 of those are in his starts, and I believe he has around 7 or 8 starts. So he had a couple of those starts where they had multiple errors. I think there was 3-1 game. There was another game where they had 2. So the guys behind him aren't helping him out. I think Oakland is, I want to say, like 13 errors or 12 errors ahead of the second place team. So
yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, Andrew Triggs, yeah, this last start, he gave up 6 runs. Only one of them was earned.
Right.
He's
had a couple outings like that. Yeah. And you look at that and the 51 that they have, I think the second place team is like 37, 38. I don't remember who it is, but they're not doing him any favors, like I said. So if he can keep guys off base, he's going to have to do a lot of it himself. So that FIP's going to have to go down. He's going to have to cut the walks down, because he's going to have to be the one that is in control, because the defense isn't helping him at all.
You know, at the beginning of the season, I was out on him, and to be honest, I still am. Even with these big strikeout games, his K per nine still sits at 8.13, so he's still getting less than a strikeout an inning. And I think he's better than the 5.70 ERA we had last year, but I don't think he's that much better. I think at best he's a 3.8 to 4.1 guy. And for a pitcher in Oakland, that's not all that impressive, because that means if he goes somewhere else that's a little more hitter friendly, that's only going to balloon up. And for a guy that doesn't strike out that many, I don't know. I feel like I would look elsewhere. So I'm still a quit on Sonny Gray.
I'm not definitely in love with him, but I think for the time being, he's sucked me back in. I've been off of him for a couple years now. Because we've just seen that strikeout rate continue to dip and dip. But now this year, it's peaked back up. He's actually got the highest swinging strike rate of his career. And it's the return of the slider is due in large part to it. He's got 24% whiffs on that slider with 64% ground balls. So that's been a really nice addition for him, bringing that puppy back. And I think that, 325 xFIP, I think he's going to be a little more homer prone than that. We've seen him, succumb to that over the last couple of years. Oakland, you would think, would mask that a little better, but I think he's going to end up hanging a few too many breaking pitches to really get closer to that. But I think he could, post a 4 ERA the rest of the year, like his FIP says, and not great K per 9 numbers, like you said, about sitting around 8 K per 9 right now. That sounds about right. Maybe he can trend up closer to a strikeout per inning, but I think he's a mid-rotation starter once again. I'm about back in. So our last guy is going to be Devin Travis. He's been crazy hot this last week. But overall, he is slashing .261, .292, .449 with 5 home runs and 4 steals. So, Van, what do you think about the Devin Travis?
I think if he didn't have this week, then he would be awful, awful, awful shape because he's done pretty much most of that damage recently. I think he's fine. I think I had him ranked, I don't know, near 15th on my second base rankings. And I still think about like that. There's some potential here, but he's not an elite option. He doesn't walk a whole lot. There's only about a 30-point difference between batting average and on-base percentage. So guys like that, when they struggle, we see what happens. They don't really do anything. So I don't know. I think for the price you paid for him, you're still sticking with him and you're going to be okay. But I'm certainly not going to go out and buy him just because of this past, week and a half or whatever.
Well, and he's not healthy a lot as well. So I'm not, if I do invest where I can, I'm not going to invest much. I'd like to see him hitting a little higher up in the lineup. It seems like he hits towards the bottom third of the lineup quite a bit, but like Van alluded to, he's raised his average 30 points in his last 10 games. So what he's done for the season, when you look at his overall numbers, has been done in a really short, small sample size. So I'm not all that legit just based on the injury history, but I don't feel like the investment that I'm going to have to make to get him because of the last few days is going to get me the return that I'd like to see from him, if I add him. So I'm going to say quit as far as just overall legit for the last few games, but I don't know. I'm just, the injury history scares me.
Yeah, I've not been on him for, basically his entire career because he does always seem to be hurt. He's never really showed too much as I'm like, what is this guy good for? He's never shown a lot of power. He's not showing a lot of speed. He never walks, which I hate guys that don't walk. And, he was nicked up coming into this season. He came along late, and he was a really crappy April. But then May, he basically flipped the switch. And let's see, his OPS went from, in April, if I can find it here, 388 April OPS. And May, he's got an OPS of 1,009. So stark contrast. And as opposed to mere batted ball luck, which I had assumed that would be the case at first, he actually has made a bit of an approach adjustment. He has shifted his place in the batter's box. I think he's moving farther away from the plate, he said. And that's actually helped him get to a lot more balls. And if you look at his batted ball distribution, if I can find it here, April 22% oppo percentage, and May 41%. So he has nearly doubled his oppo percentage. So he's spraying the ball to all fields right now. His hard contact rate is up 3%. He's hitting a lot more fly balls, 30% line drive rate, as opposed to 20% in March. So I think perhaps these are some adjustments that can stick, and so that's why I'm going to slap a legit label on him for the rest of the season. I'd be interested in picking him up, and I think that despite a really crappy walk rate, he could potentially be leading off for the Jays and score a ton of runs like all the Devin Travis truthers were hoping for before the start of the season. It's amazing how many of those guys come out of the woodwork over the last week or two after not hearing anything from those guys for the first month. Kind of drives me nuts, but I am.
He's one of those guys that when he hits 300, you're getting amazing value out of him because that's going to bump up the OBP. It's going to bump up everything. But if he hits 260, it's almost worthless because it really kills you in every other category in that regard. So as long as there's a little bit of success, then it's worth it. And you pointed out the approach change. I mean, that really, really worked for Brad Miller last year. Not so much this year, but we've seen approaches change and it make a huge difference. So I think there's a little something to that.
And I want to point out real quick, too, that he is the other half of the Travis Brothers Country Western Touring Extravaganza with Sam Travis. So we talked about last week as well. So you got to throw that out there also.
Yeah, he's the Canadian version. So he sings about maple syrup.
Like Neil Young.
Yeah. Okay, the final player that we're going to talk about here on the Legit or Quit is the Jake Lamb, who is slashing 289, 376, 584 with 14 bombs. And three steals. He has been absolutely ridiculous. So, whoever we're on here, I always lose track. Talk about Jake Lamb, somebody.
Go ahead, Ron.
I have Legit times three. I think I'm as optimistic about anybody that we've talked about as on these lists. You look at what he did in 2016 with the almost 30 homers, or 29 homers, 91 RBIs. I like to see the average a little bit higher. So the average this year. What he's posting is awesome compared to what you got from him last year. 14 bombs already, 43 RBIs. You alluded to the slash line. And one of the things that I was hoping for, I know Diamondbacks fans won't be for this, but I know our guy Nate Miller would be, is I'd love to see him get traded to the Atlanta Braves so they could make the Jake Lamb chop a thing in the new SunTrust Stadium.
Delicious.
Yes.
Also sings that song that just doesn't stop.
Oh,
am
no.
I the only one that knows this? Do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, what was that puppet? Yeah. Is that right?
Yes. Lamb yes.
Top, okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Good. Good. No, I completely agree with you, Ron, on this one. Jake Lamb's completely legit. We saw improvements last year, and we saw what he did. Well, guess what? He's still improving. He's still young, and he's stopped swinging at bad pitches, so he's walking more, and he's hitting the ball harder when he does swing. So every sign points to this being legit, and I'm all in for it. Maybe he's not quite this amazing, but maybe he is. I don't know. I kind of think he could be, you know, a top three round guy for sure, just going forward.
Well, I will put the wet blanket on him just a little bit. Because I know he still cannot hit lefties to save his life. 43% strikeout rate against left-handed pitching this year. Still, he's never hit lefties. 570 OPS against the southpaws. So there is that. But he has just been absolutely unflappable against righties. Is that a word that people use?
It is now.
Okay. It will be soon.
So you might say like a bird who's puffed up its plumage might be unflappable as well.
Because the plumage is so fat that it can't flap its wings?
I don't know. I just wanted to say plumage again.
Well, yeah. I mean, Jake Lamb, his hard contact is about the same as it was last year. Home run per fly ball, much higher without a higher pull percentage or anything. So I think he's a little over his head at this point. But, man, hitting in that Diamondbacks lineup, especially in Chase Field, you know, now that I think about it, maybe now would be a time to sell high, you guys think? Are you really worried about
Humidor?
Yeah.
Not really.
Yeah,
he's still a good hitter.
Yeah, and we're compared to where you probably – I don't know what his ADP is off the top of my head, but from where you probably drafted him, you got to be pretty happy with what you're getting right now.
Yeah, absolutely. He's just got ludicrous power, so I'm not really worried about it sapping too many home runs from. So with that, we're going to move on. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to sing the song that never ends, and I hope that you all will cue it up yourselves during this fine break. We'll be right back. Okay, gentlemen, we have returned, and we are going to talk now about some bullpens, as we do from time to time. We're going to start off with the Pirates of Pittsburgh, Van. What do you think we got going on there? Are you worried about Tony Watson being usurped?
Kind of, but not really, because I think what's in the best interest of Pittsburgh is getting Tony Watson right and then trading him and getting full value for him. However, Felipe Rivero has simply been one of the best relievers in baseball this year. I think the underlying numbers say that maybe he's not this good, but he's still really, really good. And with Watson struggling, I don't know. They're a pretty progressive team. Maybe they do pull the switch and go ahead and put Rivero into the closing position. But I don't know. I still think that ultimately getting Watson right is the best move. And I mean, I don't know what their record is, but it can't be that good. So why not just let them work it out? I mean, it's not that big of a deal if they blow another save or two here and there.
Yeah, I agree. Felipe Rivero is the guy that I want to own. And you know, like we talked about last week a little bit with the closers that get traded, you know, you have Tony Watson and he's a closer and all of a sudden he gets traded somewhere else and he's not getting you anything. But Rivero's numbers are insane, and they do look a little bit almost video game like, and I don't know if he's able to keep that up. But I mean, I like a guy coming out in the ninth inning that hits 97 and he's a lefty as well. I think he's got that going for him. So he's the guy that I want to own. But it's going to be tough because I looked in a few of my leagues this week and I can't find him available anywhere. So he's a guy that if you really want him, you're going to have to give up something for him. He's not going to be on your waiver wire most likely in most leagues.
Yeah, same thing here. He's owned in all of my leagues too.
Right. I was on him from the outset of the season, to be honest, because I actually, if you listen to the StatCast podcast, which you should, Mike Petriello had brought him up as far as his he was just infatuated with the guy because it's this lefty, this flame-throwing lefty, throws 100 miles an hour, and I think he was talking about him because of his absurd spin rate on his breaking pitch. I can't really remember, but anyway, that's what put him on my radar. And Watson was basically a prime trade candidate no matter what, maybe even if the Padres were some or the Pirates were somehow good. And so he was a handcuff for me because of that. And now he's actually really good. And I unfortunately watched what had to have been his worst outing of the year, maybe his only bad outing. I don't remember if he actually allowed any runs to score or not, but he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. He would, like, the catcher was doing jumping jacks and somersaults trying to catch all his pitches. And so it shocks me looking at his 1.95 walks per nine right now. That must have just been a bad day for him. But, yeah, with the stuff that he's got, he definitely needs to be a top five closer handcuff, especially if Watson gets either traded or demoted, which one of those things I'd say is imminent by midseason. But let's get the gauge on the situation out there in the San Diego Padres. Ron, what do you think? Are we in a full-blown committee right now between Brad Hand and Brandon Maurer?
I think so, but I the guy I want to own, for once, I'd like to have some hand. I have no hand. I'm looking at Brad Hand's stats, and since he's moved to the bullpen, his numbers are really pretty good. You know, he was a starter for the Marlins for a while, kind of a spot stretch guy, and the ERA is always high, the WHIP's always high, and I think that, you know, it's a case of you give the guy a role, he's going to produce for you, he's going to perform. And so when you look at his numbers for San Diego the last 2 years, you know, last year he posted an ERA under 3, a WHIP of 1.1, this year 1.82 and 0.94. I think he's the guy that I want to own out of that committee, not just because of my love for Seinfeld, but I think that he's the guy that eventually, if it is a committee, I feel a little better about having him than I do Brandon Morrow.
And I'm kind of going to throw a little, what did you say earlier, the wet blanket here a little bit, yep. Because Brad Hand of the King is basically the shiny new toy. He's the guy that everybody wants because he's been really, really good. But if you look at the numbers, really, Brandon Morrow's been good with the exception of actual ERA. All the secondary stats point. So Brad Hand has a 2.92 ERA, a 2.87 FIP, and 11 K per nine. Whereas Maurer has a 6 ERA, which is obviously bad, but his FIP is better at 2.56, and he's got a 10 K per 9. So he really hasn't been as bad as I've been led to believe. Now, Brad Hand got a couple of saves a few days ago, but then the last two save chances went to Maurer. So I don't know. It's an interesting situation to watch, but I will say that Maurer isn't really as bad of a pitcher as I think he's being put out there to be. He's actually been pretty solid with the exception of some bad fortune.
Yeah, that's true, but I hate Brandon Maurer, so I'm not going to own him anywhere. But they do seem to be employing a full platoon between those guys, the lefty and the righty. And so, I mean, really, you have to own both of them at this point. And I'm still stashing Carter Capps. Hopefully he'll be up sometime soon now that the calendar is about to flip to June, and he'll be eligible to come back from the 60-day disabled list. But, yeah, I mean, both of these guys have value and need to be owned if you're chasing saves moving forward, for sure. It does seem like the rare actual bullpen save platoon. It's weird. More teams should probably do it.
Mm-hmm. And leave it to the Padres to be the actual team that does do it. That's bizarre.
Well, what do they have to lose? Their team is like atrocious. So if they're going to try something like that out, and for what it's worth, Brad Hand has been, there's already been a ton of speculation about him getting moved to a competing team. He's being scouted pretty heavily. So whatever that's worth, I don't know if he's going to necessarily take over a closer job, but if you're targeting him in a trade, I would not give up very much just because he might be in a permanent seventh, eighth inning role if he goes to, you know, the Nationals or something like that. But let's move on to some prospects, boys, and this is where I turn it over to Ron Rigney. Let's talk about, we got two guys to talk about for you this week, and then I'm going to give some a couple deeper names after you're done. So lead us off with Jorge Alfaro.
Yeah, so I looked at a couple of Phillies guys this week because I'm trying to keep this at AAA level. I'm trying to keep this at guys that we're going to benefit from in fantasy in all formats, including yearly formats. And it's kind of a hard thing to predict sometimes with prospects. But I think, you know, as I've talked about and as we've talked about with the DL spots and the crazy amount of players that are on the DL, I think it's just it's as important this year as any to pay attention to these guys. So a couple of Phillies, you know, the Phillies are at the bottom of the barrel as far as the division. They're not going anywhere. So you could see them. And I've written about a couple of guys from the Phillies as well already. And I think they could start giving these kids a shot fairly soon, especially if they start making some trades and just kind of coming to the realization that they're not going to go anywhere if they move some pieces. So Jorge Alfaro, when you look at catching prospects, there's not too many that come up through AAA that you get excited about from a fantasy standpoint. And as I wrote about in the article, it's funny how we look at that phrase, a better real life player than fantasy player. And I think that describes catchers more than any other spot, because you can have a catcher in the league that, you know, is looked at as a great player, but catchers do so many other things for a team other than hit. They can hit about 200 and they're said to be one of the best at what they do, because they can call games and they can frame pitches and they can throw out runners. Alfaro is kind of a better offensive prospect than we see coming out. He's one of the top catchers as far as in AAA. He's a top three prospect in the Phillies organization, came over Nicole Hamill's deal from the Rangers. When you look at his numbers, he's had 8 seasons in the minors and he's only 23. So he's had a lot of seasoning for being a young kid. Slash line career, 268, 325, 436. He's hit 70 bombs. When you look at his overall numbers, I kind of had to do a double take and I had to dig a little deeper. He had 39 steals in those seasons, but it's a little bit misleading because when you look out of those 39, 34 of those were from 2 seasons early on. And so his speed is really kind of diminished to a point where he's not really stealing bases. I think he has maybe 1 this year. And so you're not going to get that from him as you normally wouldn't out of a catcher. The thing that we need to see him do, because he is hitting 295 on the year, is the strikeout rate's got to come down. He's striking out at a 29% clip, and he, out of those, out of his at bats this season, he only has walked 3 times, and so that's got to even out a little bit as far as what he's doing at the plate. The scouts like his arm. His arm out as the highest point in his game, even higher than his ability at the plate. But we just like to see his discipline improve a little bit. He's got to increase the walks and bring the strikeouts down. And so even though he has had that many seasons in AAA, I think I misspoke earlier. I think he's only got 5 seasons, not 8. I don't know why I have 8 there. I mean, he's been mashing in the minors since he was 15. I don't think that's possible. glad I caught that. But he's a guy that's got a lot of potential, and with Cameron Rupp and Andrew Knapp at the major league level, they're serviceable, but they're not the ceiling that he has. And so I think you'll see him coming up. So as I kind of alluded to in the article, I don't know if you need to add him at this time, but he's definitely a guy that you need to know who he is, because, you know, the catcher spot, I equate it to tight end in football a lot. There's a few guys that you really like to have, but other than that, you want to try to get guys that aren't going to hurt you. And he's one of those rare ones that he's going to stick behind the plate, because I think he's progressed enough with his defense and his game calling and his ability to frame pitches. Not great at any of those. Good arm. Great. Some say great arm, but he's done enough that he's earn the right to stay behind the plate. So I think he'll be useful in fantasy formats. It may not be right away. You know, we talked about these guys coming up. We talked about Jose De Leon earlier with the potential that he has, but just not showing it yet. And this, it could be a case of this as well. But I think he's a guy that's going to come up, and he's at a spot that's definitely a neat spot on a lot of teams.
I am very concerned about that approach and the strikeout rate, but he could be one of the guys that, or maybe the only other catcher besides JT Realmuto that gives you some stolen bases. But tell us about Ben Lively, the other guy that you wrote up this week.
Well, and looking like I said, I'm trying to find, you know, not only guys that are posting good numbers of it, but where the opportunity presents itself for them to get big league time, and those are a little harder to predict than others. But there's certain teams that just are going to need a shot in the arm at some point, because they're either going to be so far out of it, they need to see what they have, or they know they've got a shot at going somewhere. So they need the, you know, that guy to come up and show what he has. So Ben Lively is, and I'm going to go ahead and apologize ahead of time. I wrote in this Blake Lively, I don't know how many times, and he's definitely not. So I had to go back and change that after I wrote this. So if I refer to Blake Lively, the Phillies prospect, you guys know who I mean. Not a top 100 prospect, not even in the top 10 for the Phillies. I believe that MLB.com has him ranked 24th. So he's pretty far down there. He's a solid guy. He's not going to be the impact player I think that Jorge Alfaro could be. But he could profile as kind of a middle to the back end of the rotation starter at best. He could be he could be kind of a stretch guy in the bullpen. So as far as fantasy impact, it just kind of depends upon where they decide to use him. But he has posted some decent numbers in his career: 2.99 ERA, 1.1 WHIP, and his numbers have been very consistent over his career. Not a big strikeout guy, 522 and 562 innings, but he's off to another great start this year. The ratios are low as they have been for his career, and so he's making a little bit of noise as far as what he's doing. The 2.4 ERA, he's got a WHIP under one so far in 56 innings. So the thing I like to look at for these AAA guys as well is I want to see the sample size be decent size. And so I think 50 innings is a pretty good sample. And as we talked about, he's not a big strikeout guy, but the another thing I liked about him, especially this season, was the strikeout to walk ratio is 45-7, which I think you got to like there. And when you look at what they're doing as far as in the rotation, and you know, we talked about the Astros rotation earlier, but when you look at all five pitchers in the Phillies rotation, they have ERAs between 4.34 and 6.13. So they don't have, and then they were 17 and 32 when I wrote this article. So they're not going anywhere. They need to be realistic about what they're doing, and they need to give these guys a shot. So with Lively, I think it's more of you need to kind of see where they're going to use him. If he's going to get a chance to start, he could be an excellent deep league guy, because if he does pitch well down the stretch, it's a case of, you know, he could be, with all the injuries you have, he could be that streamer that week towards the middle end of the season that could, you know, could get you a good start that you need, maybe in a head-to-head league where you could get a win that might propel you into the playoffs. I mean, you know, those guys are kind of the unsung heroes of fantasy in some regards, especially with the guys that you might have that you have on the DL now. But I mean, who knows as far as the season drags on and these guys get a little, you know, get more innings under their belt, you don't know as far as what's going to happen with injuries. So he's a guy, like I said, not going to make the impact that Alfaro is going to make, but he's definitely somebody that if he gets a shot and they do decide to put him in the rotation, he could be a streamer, two-start starter that could help you out and kind of get you over the hump later in the year.
Sounds good. And the two guys that I'm going to throw out real quick here are, I got a pair of second basemen, and one of them is a Nick Duran special. Second shout-out for him on the show. He came on, it might have been the same podcast, where he talked about Shedrick Long. He is a Reds fan. He follows them closely. And so he tipped us all off on him very, very early. I had definitely not heard of him before that. And I'm going to bust out the Sean Connery again, because his name Shedrick just sounds like Sean Connery.
Shedrick Long. But you're the man now, dog.
Long.
you're the shed now, Long.
Sorry. Your second base play is very impressive.
Zardoz. Sorry, had to throw that one in there. No one understands that reference, but no, I love it.
I don't get that at all.
Look it up.
How do you spell that?
Zardoz. Z-A-R-D-O-Z. Oh, boy. Look it up and look at the outfit Sean Connery is wearing. You will not be disappointed.
Okay. Now I need to see Zar.
I really threw you off here on this one. Yeah. Zardoz. Yeah, it's a movie. Okay, I'll explain it while you look it up.
There's a floating...
Ahead, yeah. Sean Connery, after making Bond movies, decided he wanted to do something really artsy. So he decided to make this movie called Zardoz, and it's just absolutely bizarre. It's, I don't know, maybe like 2.5 hours long, and it's the hardest 2.5 hours for anyone to sit through. But it is definitely worth a watch. Something about the future and guns, and he's wearing that little Borat Speedo, and yeah, it's great.
Shredrick Long.
Trebek. Trebek.
I have no words. That's got a stunning 42% on Rotten Tomatoes.
the crisscross red suspenders really set that thing off, too.
You do, yeah, and the pistols and the ponytail. We're really painting the picture for listeners here. You're welcome.
Good God. I will think of that now every time I think of Shed Long. So he's a much smaller man than I assume Sean Connery is. He's 5'8", 180 pounds. 21 years of age. He's at high A this year. Over 210 plate appearances so far. He's hitting 317, 371, 513 with 8 bombs, and he's 3-for-6 in stolen bases. 7% walk rate, 22% K, so pretty average there. But he's shaping up to be a pretty nice power speed middle infielder. He should be making a lot of midseason top 100 lists, and he's got the potential to be a 2015 second baseman. With a pretty decent average, so definitely worthy of a pickup there if you didn't add him in the offseason when Nick Duran told you to. The second baseman of the day is Scott Kingery, which also sounds like something Sean Connery would talk about. But he's plays for the aforementioned Phillies. Another second base prospect, like I said, he's 23, a little bigger, 5'10", 180 pounds. At AA this year, 213 plate appearances, hitting 316, 392, 668 with 16 home runs and is 12-for-14 on the base paths with 10% walk rate and 17% strikeout rate. So, I mean, the downside for him is that he cannot possibly supplant the almighty Cesar Hernandez at second base with the Phillies. But and also you have to take into account some of those crazy numbers are fueled by Redding, which is one of the hitteriest parks in all of the land. But he's looking like a plus defender as well there. So eventually I think you'll be looking at the Kingery at the Keystone, as they call it, in Philadelphia. So definitely give him an ad.
Real quick, do you guys know, that's another conversation I had with a buddy of mine, why it's called the Keystone?
Not a clue, but I love it.
Okay, all right.
Do you have the answer or are you just...
No, I don't actually. That means I have homework for later on. I need to look it up. So
okay. Yeah. All right, so our last segment real quick here. Van, we'll start with you. We're going to move on to our weekend streamers. Who you got this week?
Real quick, I'm going to commandeer this because the greatest news story in history has happened now in baseball.
Mike Trout has already healed his finger, and he's back on the field.
Somehow even better than that. Hawk Harrelson is retiring from the booth after the 2018 season. And you can put it on the board. Yes. Good riddance. Streamers. So, yeah, I kind of did what Ron said he wanted to do last week because I like to steal things. And that is I picked a Friday, Saturday, Sunday guy. So on Friday night, I have Kyle Gibson of the Minnesota Twins against the Troutless Angels, which is the only reason I'm going to put this guy on this list because it's the Troutless Angels. And then on Saturday, this is my traditional R.A. Dickey pick. He's going to face against Cincinnati. And it's basically Joey Votto and a couple of weird pieces that occasionally do stuff, but I still think there's some value to be had.
The Dickey Picky.
The Dickey Picky. And then finally, I'm going to erase your memory with that horrible pun you just made by saying pick the eraser, who you also said don't pick, Erasmo Ramirez, facing against Seattle on Sunday. He's been all right, not great, but for deep streamers, he's a guy to take a look at.
So I had two. I didn't find as much I liked this week, especially on Sunday. The first guy that I have up there, and he's remarkably only 26% owned, is the Coors Kielbasa German Marquez. So you look at him, 1.06 ERA on the road. He's 2-0. San Diego's 29th in league of hitting righties, so it makes sense pitching in good pitcher's park. So I'm going with him Friday. And then Saturday, I like Randall Delgado. Been off to a decent start. And the thing I like the most about him, he's only 2% owned. So there's maybe two leagues that exist in the universe where you're not going to get him. But he's a guy that so far so good in the starting rotation. I don't know how long that is going to last. So for somebody that's low owned like that, might be good to take advantage of it now, because I think teams are going to catch up with him fairly soon.
I do like how you continued the Coors Kielbasa nickname. I'm very impressed that you kept it going.
I like it.
Well, the people seem to respond pretty well to that one, so I agree. We hit the nail on the head. So my three guys, I was unable to find. I cannot bring myself to recommend Kyle Gibson in any scenario. I'm sorry. I've watched too much of Kyle Gibson over the years to be able to get over that. So I got two Saturday starters and one on Sunday. I've got Robert Gesellman against Pittsburgh at PNC on Saturday. His ERA has been much worse. He's got one of the biggest deltas between his ERA and FIP. Of any starter so far this year. So I would expect a little bit of improvement from him going forward, and Pittsburgh stinks. So, and then my other guy on Saturday is Joe Biagini, the Italian pumpernickel. I don't know.
I actually snorted on that. I don't know if the mic picked it up, but you got me to snort with that one.
I'm proud of myself. I've done my good work. Excellent. For the weekend.
Excellent. We always usually kind of point this out. I think we have named the show at this point with that.
Yeah, there you go.
Easily.
But yeah, he had a really good start his last time out. 6 innings, 7 hits, 2 earned runs, 1 walk, 7 Ks. I wrote him up over on Fantastics after his start. It was the first time this season that he had gone more than 5 innings. Because he's still getting stretched out. But he went 95 pitches, so he appears to be pretty fully stretched out at this point because he's coming out of the pen to start the year. But his changeup, he used 26 changeups in that start for 27% pitch deployment, and there was 31% whiffs on that changeup, which is like, holy crap. Like, that's really good. And 57% ground balls in that outing. So hopefully, if he continues using that, he could be a really interesting guy. So it's a tough matchup against the Yankees. So if you're in a shallow league, I wouldn't blame you for avoiding that. But I'm picking him up in deeper leagues, and I'm watching him closely. And then, of course, you know, Van, you've got your weekly Dickie Picky, and this is my weekly Dan Norris, whatever rhymes with Dan Norris, recommendation. He pitches Sunday against the White Sox. And I continue to believe that he will break out, and the White Sox are not great. So there you go.
Don't bore us with that pick of Norris.
That works. That's pretty good on the fly. Okay, all right, Ron, what do you got going on this week? And then we're going to cut out of here.
You can find me at The Real Made on Twitter, and I'll have the On Deck Circle again for you next week. We're going to, I think, start digging a little deeper for our On Deck Circle guys. And I suppose, you know, I made my debut at Fantastics last weekend, and I apparently didn't F it up that bad that they've asked me to come back multiple nights this month. So you can find me over again at Insider Baseball as well. So check me out.
Cash me outside.
Van Lee. How about that?
Very good. Yes.
These days?
I'll be writing my holder fold this week for Big Guy Fantasy Sports. So look forward to that. I'll be discussing Andrew McCutchen, I think Dallas Keuchel, and some surprises. You can also find my other stuff on BootuInc.com. That's BootuInc.com. And I'm going to be writing some of my around the horn fake baseball quote things for the BackupCatcher.com.
That is always enjoyable. So folks, go make sure you check that out and you follow Van everywhere. I continue to follow my work on Big Guy Fantasy Sports and, of course, Fantastics. I will not be on the SiriusXM program this weekend, however, as I will be busy sleeping off a horrible hangover. I'm going out of town. But the podcast will be back next week. And so until then, ladies and gentlemen, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.
I'm sure that was coincidental too that you were louder than us.
Yeah, well, you know,
it's like the bird that like puffs up its plumage to look bigger. That's kind of what this is.
Yeah. Okay, Van, this is a fun little game. Now you officially have to insert the word plumage into the podcast at some point.
Oh, I can do that. I'm sure.
Okay, good.
Too bad we don't have Brad Peacock on the agenda.
Exactly. That'd be perfect.
Amazing. That might have to be worked in.
And for Shelly V's stud of the week of the ever, the word plumage is actually in the drop. So that's been used before.
Oh, that's
for sure.
Right. Yeah.
I'd like to touch his plumage, I believe is what is said. Referring to Mike Trout, of course.
Oh, Mike Trout. We'll talk about him
mm-hmm.
very shortly. All right. I'll get us rolling.